and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu, and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and Katie Balls. We've just had the first members' ballot from the Conservative leadership contest, and Boris Johnson topped the poll with a whopping 114 votes. Jeremy Hunt came in second place, but only on 43 votes. Mark Harper, Andrea Lissom and Esther McVeigh were all knocked out. Katie, you were in the room when the result was called. What was the reaction like?
So it was the 1922 committee announcing the result, and this was in a room off the committee corridor. And I would say when the results was called, you did sense there was a slight surprise in the room that Boris Johnson had got such a high margin of the vote. And that's 114 MPs. Now, the magic number that an MP needs to, in theory, get to the final two is 105. Once you have 105, it seems that even if the other person got more than you, you would have a spot in the final two. This doesn't guarantee that Boris Johnson is in the final two. Boris Johnson allies are very keen to press the fact that this is still ongoing. They're not going to take anything for granted. But it does mean that I think increasingly he is looking rather unassailable. And if you add up, if you want to do some mathematics, what the different other candidates got, Dominic Raab, Jeremy Hunt, Michael Gove, Boris Johnson got more than the three of them combined, which I think gives you just a sense of how far ahead he is. And this is, of course, the group he's supposed to be the least popular with. He's more popular with the grassroots, and yet he is ahead in the parliamentary party.
Isabel, one person who wasn't surprised, probably Boris Johnson himself. You write in on Coffee House today that they calculated it to the last vote, that it was 114 that he would get.
Yes, so there was a prediction that was developed by Grant Shapps, who's doing the data for Boris Johnson, and he wrote the number in an envelope which he sealed before the result and handed to Johnson and told him to open it afterwards, and it had 114 on
it. It's very House of Cards, isn't it?
What it is, but it also shows that this is a completely different campaign to the one that Johnson ran in 2016. This is really data intensive. There's a spreadsheet that's been running for about 3 months that all Boris Johnson's handlers and whips have been feeding information into on an hourly basis about where each MP in the Conservative Party is in terms of their thoughts on Boris Johnson, their thoughts on other leadership candidates. And the reason this spreadsheet is useful, not just for this round, but for the next few rounds, is the Boris Johnson campaign know where people are likely to go next from candidates who've been knocked out or candidates who are weaker. So if you see people, for instance, peeling off from the Sajid Javid campaign, the Boris Johnson team have probably got the best prediction of where those people are going to go. So they have quite a good predictor of who Johnson's going to face in the final two.
That's a really slick campaign. Katie, do you think that there's now going to be pressure for an expedited contest? I mean, do other people even stand a chance? Will they just drop out and let him win?
To be honest, I think a debate is going to be had about this, because the argument goes that the group Boris Johnson was supposed to be the least popular with is the parliamentary party. For the reasons just outlined by Isabel, that is clearly not working out as some had predicted. I think he's really benefited from having, for example, Gavin Williamson, the former chief whip, on his campaign team. Now, if Boris Johnson keeps up such a large lead and he then made it to the final two, I think there would be some, including Boris Johnson's supporters, who would make the argument that why waste time, they would say, by having all these hustings, going around, speaking to members, when Boris Johnson is often seen as the grassroots favourite anyway. And if you were to expedite the contest, that would give the new Prime Minister more time to try and negotiate with Brussels and perhaps even speak to EU leaders before they go on holiday. I think there would be a bit of an uproar, though, if this was to actually happen, because lots of people point to what happened with Theresa May in the 2016 leadership contest. And they say that what the problem was there was that she was never tested in the way of giving the grassroots a say, and she was never tested by doing all these hustings. So I don't think it would be an easy sell, but I do think if it keeps up in this kind of sense, that this argument will be aired more because of the tight time frame in terms of the Brexit deadlines and the Article 50 extension.
So Isabel, could anything go wrong for Boris Johnson between now and the final ballot? And if so, what?
It would have to be pretty spectacular. You know, we're talking that's something that goes far beyond any of the rows that he's had over the past few years. He's got, it's interesting because there is a much higher bar for the other candidates in this contest in terms of acceptable behaviour than there is for Boris Johnson. He can say unpleasant things that people find very offensive within the party. If you talk to his team, they'll always say, oh, his personal life is priced in. And they'll say this so often that you sort of think, well, I mean, could he kill someone and that be priced in as well? You know, how sort of low, how high can he go? But I think really what anyone who doesn't want a Boris Johnson premiership should probably be focusing on from now on is stop Boris with the membership, because you're not going to stop him getting into the final two. He could stop himself getting into the final two by something catastrophic, but it's much more effective to start sowing doubts in Conservative members' minds about his ability to be Prime Minister. That's still going to be incredibly hard, though.
And Katie, what does this result mean for the second person to go through to the final two? Is it Jeremy Hunt or is it Michael Gove, Sajid Javid?
So I think it's been a slightly disappointing result, probably for every cabinet candidate in a way. Jeremy Hunt had emerged this week as the person who was getting an edge over Michael Gove. And he has, if you look at the numbers, it just is a very slight edge. I don't think it's clear from the figures that Jeremy Hunt is the clear favourite. You do get the sense that Michael Gove is still hanging on in there. I think Sajid Javid's numbers, he managed to get just over Matt Hancock, which I think is what he needed to do. But I do think we're now going to see these candidates coming under pressure to consider whether they want to continue in this race. And we talked earlier about an expedited leadership contest. One way to make it quicker would be to have candidates who don't seem as though they have much of a chance to step aside, so you need to have less rounds coming up. I think so far we've clearly, and I suppose you would expect this, seen lots of fighting tweets saying that they plan to go on. Dominic Raab, who only managed votes in the 20s, has said that he will continue. But I do think that there will be pressure now on figures like Dominic Raab to think about folding.
It's interesting, though, because for some of them, they see staying in the contest. And I mean, this is probably an insight into where they are mentally at the moment. But they see staying in the contest as being a duty because it keeps the debate open and stops, even if it's, you know, a final two that goes to the membership quicker, that keeps the stops it from being a coronation.
And Katie, do you think we'll see more of an effort now to have an anyone but Boris candidate? I mean, surely that's one of the ways of stopping him, is if all the cabinet contenders joined in behind one person.
I think that rests on them being able to decide amongst themselves who that candidate is, and that would mean putting personal ambitions aside, which probably means it's unlikely to happen anytime soon. And again, I think had Jeremy Hunt surged ahead a bit more considerably there and perhaps even had a 10 MP lead on Michael Gove, you could see how they could make that argument. But I think it is just quite close. So I can see that why both camps think that they, you know, have skin in the game. And from the Michael Gove camp perspective, they've managed to do that after a pretty bad few days. So they think that is now out the way, perhaps. Now they can build it back and get ahead of Jeremy Hunt again. So, but we could still have more dropouts to come. And I do think particularly Dominic Raab, people will say, rowing behind Boris and get this Brexiteer candidate.
And as well, between now and Tuesday's vote, what could change? Could candidates change their minds about dropping out? Change camps, etc.
As Katie said, there is going to be a lot of pressure on them. I think what's going to be really interesting is not just who from the McVeigh, Harper and Leadsom camps goes where, but whether camps are able to secure defections as well. I think they'll be as interested in that as anything else, and who they get the most defections from. It's likely to be Sajid Javid and Dominic Raab.
And Katie, one of the other surprises for today is that Rory Stewart has actually got through, even though Esther McVeigh and Landrea Leadsom and Mark Harper haven't. Were you surprised about Rory Stewart's success today?
I think that of the candidates who are seen as the least likely or that not the serious contenders, Rory Stewart has had the most impressive campaign because he has had cut through. And we've spoken about it many times on this podcast in our Rory Stewart section with his multiple walks to various areas. So I think his enthusiasm meant that it did seem as though he might get there. And in the end, he even had a couple of votes to spare. I think if you look at who's been knocked out, I don't think there are any great surprises there. Andrea Leadsom, we knew, was struggling. I think her team did think that lots of the support she had in 2016 would still hold. It clearly wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Mark Harper, I think, has failed to really make too much noise in this competition. And Esther McVeigh had a very clear pitch, but by having such a clear pitch, it had quite a narrow audience within the Conservative Party.
There was also an organisation problem as well. You had Esther McVeigh still phoning up people who were known to be working with other campaigns, not just supporters, but actually sort of doing some of the hard work, saying, can I count on your support? Which was either her thinking that she could sort of elicit a late change of mind and have someone coming over and defecting and saying, I've changed my mind, Esther is the woman to lead this party. Or that she just didn't have the data operation that some of the other candidates had.
Katie and Isabel, thanks very much. And you can subscribe, rate and review this podcast, all the usual routes as you know. And do join us again tomorrow.